Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Over the past decade, fishermen from Maine and Canada have been waging a lobster war. The dispute is over which country owns 277 miles of lucrative fishing water off Machias Seal Island in the Gulf of Maine. Both the United States and Canada have claimed the island since the end of the Revolutionary War, but it's only recently that ownership has mattered to the fishing industry. Warming ocean temperatures are driving lobsters farther north and into these contested waters. Lobstermen are getting heated, too.
There comes a point when you get pushed so far where you just have to say, okay, that's enough. We're going to stay here. Because if I ask you to move somewhere and it's going to cost you a few $100, you might go, yeah, well, that's not that big a deal. It's going to cost you $100,000. I'm going anywhere.
That's Canadian lobsterman Lawrence Cook, one of the many fishermen we meet in the documentary Lobster War, the fight over the world's richest fishing grounds. The film chronicles the battle and looks at the future of the industry. And joining me now is one of the filmmakers, David Abel. He's also a reporter for the Boston Globe. Hey there, David.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So this is an area of land that we're talking about that people call the Gray Zone, and it's the water surrounding Machias Seal Island, which is between the coast of Down East Maine and the Grand Manan Island in Canada. Why has the land remained in dispute for so long? I mean, we're going back a couple of centuries here.
Well, the truth is that both sides continue to claim it for reasons that have to do with mainly fishing. And neither side has been willing to cede their claims to the other country. That said, it's been a kind of sleepy issue for generations, and nobody really seemed to make much of a fuss about it. In the 1830s, the Canadians decided to build a lighthouse there because there were all kinds of the tides there are very, very heavy. And the Americans were like, okay, fine, but that doesn't mean you own it. Then in the last decade or so, the warming waters in the Gulf of Maine has pushed the lobster fishery further north, specifically into this gray zone, and the lobster population there has surged. And that surge and that increasing value of the lobster fishery has made the Canadians say, oh, those are our waters too, and I think we're going to fish them.
I see. So neither side seemed to care all that much about this region when it wasn't a profitable fishing area, and there was maybe no reason to settle this dispute, but now there's a lot at stake.
Right, and arguably there's less reason to settle the dispute now because neither side wants to give in and lose potentially half or all of their fishery.
So you mentioned that surging population of lobster, at least due in part to warming ocean temperatures. But can you help us quantify that? I mean, what are we talking about here? Is this really become the new hot spot for lobstering?
Well, so from the mid-coast of Maine up through Canada, the lobster population in the last decade has surged. It's more than a half a billion-dollar fishery now. And we're talking in 2016, when it reached its peak, the overall fishery in just Maine alone was something like 130 million pounds of lobster. Now, that area off of between Canada and the United States, off of Washington County, which is part of Down East Maine, that has seen the largest rise in the lobster fishery. And that is arguably as a result of the warming and the movement and the fact that there's a sweet spot, essentially, for lobster in that area.
Yeah, 130 million pounds is a lot. Some of the numbers you highlight in your film are really striking. I was struck by the value of that haul being more than half a billion dollars, which is roughly triple what it was in 2000. So you get a sense of just how big the dollars are and how quickly it's accelerated just in the last 15 or so years.
Exactly. And that has exacerbated, arguably, this conflict. And, you know, in my mind, this is an example of how climate change is not some distant abstract threat to our future, but one that is having a tangible impact in people's lives today.
Okay. And really, and again, these numbers are big, but it's really just one slice of the issue here, because that half a billion is just the direct value of what's landing there. I want to underscore the point about the broader effect on the economy, and that it's more than just the lobstermen. And here's a moment from early on in the film. So this is against the backdrop of a lobster processing plant. You spoke with a man named Johnny Hathaway. He runs Shucks Maine Lobster, and he talks about what he thinks is really at stake for Maine if the Canadians are allowed to fish in this area.
That's really Maine product, and once it goes to Canada and it comes back as product of Canada, then people don't associate it with Maine. The Maine brand is really what Maine sells, And it's not just the lobster industry, it's the tourism industry. And if we lose market share because of that, that can really hurt the industry.
So, David, I find that to be a really striking argument here. You know, you would think, well, what's the difference? I mean, it's the same lobster, whether it was caught by a Canadian lobsterman or an American lobsterman. What's the difference on my plate? And yet it's that brand association he's talking about. There is a tourism effect. I mean, people go to Maine because they think of it as lobster country.
And the truth of the matter is it's very complicated because a lot of the lobster caught in Maine ends up getting processed in Canada and then sometimes comes back and gets sold in the United States or pre-packaged in different ways in the United States. So it is a sort of it's a very incestuous kind of relationship between the two countries. And that has only been exacerbated in the last year or two since the trade war between the United States and China. So the Chinese were buying a rising amount of lobster from Maine fishermen. And now they're not. That export market has completely plummeted. And now the Chinese are buying their lobster from Canadians. But that lobster sometimes comes from the States.
So these sort of trade and border disputes are fascinating. But I'm curious whether in the course of your reporting you came to feel that perhaps they were a distraction, like when you were talking to people in Maine or Canada for that matter. I mean, were they fixated on that and perhaps not considering the broader implications? This is fundamentally a climate change story in a lot of ways. Was that a topic of discussion or was it all about who owns this island?
Absolutely. No. I mean, first and foremost on the minds of any fisherman is what's going to happen next year and what's going to happen in a few years. And should I, you know, take a mortgage out on this boat? Should I, you know, buy another truck? How much gear should I invest in? And, you know, a fisherman isn't a true fisherman unless he fears for the future. And that is just part of it, part of the life of, you know, working at sea and wondering if there's still going to be fish to catch or lobster to trap. And in this case, people really understand there that the warming waters are not some sort of hoax or, you know, government conspiracy. They see it every day. They know it. And we have evidence of what happens when lobster experience much warmer waters. And in the film, we learn a lot about what happened south of Cape Cod from Long Island up to the waters off Rhode Island. And we've seen there a 90% drop in the lobster fishery.
Yeah, there's real concern down there. I've recently did some reporting in New Bedford and was hearing about that. And they're also concerned about acidification, perhaps weakening the shells on the lobster and other shellfish as well.
Absolutely. And those go hand in hand.
So one of the things you captured really well, I think, was the way that perceptions of the same issue can be different depending on which side of the border that you're on. So I want to play a couple of clips here from the film where you get these lobstermen from both countries. The first comes from Patrick Feeney and Robert Lemieux. These are Americans, and they're talking about how they see countries asserting their sovereignty on the sea. Let's take a listen.
Our government does not come out and back us up as much as their government does. And we need more backing from our government is what we need.
If I go over onto the Canadian side of the U.S. boundary line, they take me, my boat, my gear, my crew, put us in jail.
That was Patrick Feeney and Nobert Lemieux. Apologies. And then on the Canadian side, you also spoke with a gentleman named Brian Guptill, who paints a different picture of how things are playing out.
I know if I cross the line over there into sovereign U.S. waters undisputed, there's a big boat with a big gun on it. But if you didn't stop, they'd tell you they were going to fire into the hull. And if you don't stop, they'll shoot and stop the engine. But that's the general practices of the U.S. Coast Guard.
So, David, what's striking to me there is that among the fishermen, each seems to think that the other's government is tougher. You know, each one is saying, well, that U.S. Coast Guard, they're really tough. You know, they'll blow a hole in your hull. Oh, those Canadians, they're really tough. I mean, what was the reality that you found when you were out on the water?
I think the reality is there, you know, it's changed over time, and there has been arguably some harassment of fishermen on both sides of the border from fishermen themselves and then perhaps from law enforcement authorities sort of waving their flag. But the truth is that I think both sides want to see more enforcement, and they want sort of rules that pertain to each other's sides to basically cover each other's fishermen. And that's not going to happen because only the fishermen on the Americans, they have to abide by American regulations and the Canadians have to abide by Canadian regulations. And it becomes very confusing and dicey in this maelstrom of waters where both countries are fishermen are moving around, setting traps, using different gear and different conservation practices under different regulations.
And I mean, the issue can seem amusing in some ways, but on a serious note, I mean, you heard from multiple people who said it's only a matter of time before somebody gets killed over these disputed waters. I mean, do you think that is that hyperbole or is that a real risk?
No, and it's really dangerous fishing there. I mean, fishing is a dangerous profession to begin with. Lobster fishing is an even more dangerous profession because you are hauling up these really heavy traps from deep underwater. There are all kinds of moving parts. I mean, when you're putting out these – filming on these boats was dangerous. I mean, you're always aware of where you're standing because one line can catch your ankle and you're overboard in seconds. And in this case, with such crowded waters and so many people fishing now – and different kind of gear, and topping it off, really powerful tides, among the most powerful tides in the world in this region. That is a recipe for danger. And we've seen people get hurt already.
You know, there's a certain political danger to this, too. And there's sort of a broader dispute going on between the U.S. and Canada on other fronts as well. I mean, we've seen increasingly intense rhetoric between President Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, not about lobsters, although maybe that's next. But they've been talking about trade, tariffs, border laws. I mean, could the lobster war be the next frontier here?
Well, just after we ended, we wrapped our filming of this last summer, the American Border Patrol started actually, for the first time in anyone's memory, really upsetting Canadians, boarding Canadian fishing boats. Allegedly, they were looking for migrants for some reason in the Trump era, deciding that they would leave Canada and come to the United States. Nobody on the Canadian side of the border believed that, and they thought it was effectively harassment.
Interesting. So as far as how this gets resolved, there is one notion in the film floated by the Canadian lobsterman we heard from earlier, Brian Guptill. His idea is, let's just designate the area as an environmental sanctuary.
I'd be shot for saying it probably, but both countries have a mandate to make marine parks. Make it a marine park and nobody can fish it. It wouldn't be popular, but it would address the mandate of both countries. And you'd make it so that you didn't have to worry about whether there's any oil and gas under this to fight about, because nobody'd be doing anything in it. It's a way to resolve it without any bloodshed.
Sounds like a reasonable compromise, David. But the more I think about it, hold on, isn't that just a win for Canada? Because, I mean, eventually the lobsters, if climate change continues, they're just moving farther north. Ultimately, this dispute will resolve itself in a way because they'll just end up in undisputed Canadian waters.
Precisely. There was a convenient part of the argument that he left
out,
which is clearly, you know, lobsters are moving north. And during the season that the Canadians traditionally don't fish, which is the summer, and the Americans do fish, the lobster population is migrating toward Canadian waters. And so they would be just happy if the Americans didn't fish, because then they would be it would end up in their lobster pots.
Just be patient, and then the victory is coming. That's David Abel, one of the filmmakers of Lobster War, the fight over the world's richest fishing grounds. David, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
And the film will be screening in WBUR's City Space on Wednesday night at 6:30. For more information, visit our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. There's more ahead. Coming up, the HBO documentary Leaving Neverland is fueling a fierce debate about Michael Jackson's legacy. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.